Welcome to Monterey Bay This Week from KAZU News. It's Saturday, January 17th. I'm Ngozi Cole. This year marks the 40th anniversary of Martin Luther King Day, and the Monterey County Black Caucus will celebrate on Monday. The organization, which has over 1,000 members, will hold a parade in Seaside to honor King's legacy. Co-founder Annalisa Mitchell says this year's celebration is especially important.
The climate has changed. People are afraid to come out of their houses. This parade symbolizes that we are better together and we stand as one, we stand united.
Monday's parade will be from Obama Way to Old Meyer Center at noon. Some communities are rethinking their contracts with a company that provides cameras to record license plates, but one in South Monterey County is expanding their use. The Greenfield City Council voted this week to add 3 additional flock cameras. Mayor Pro Tem Ariana Rodriguez assured the public that they will ensure data privacy.
Anything came to light where it wasn't and there was a breach and it wasn't part of what we signed up for, essentially, that there would be some recourse.
This comes the same week the City of Santa Cruz voted to end its contract with Flock early amidst data and privacy concerns. Our partner, KQED, spoke with Santa Cruz Mayor Fred Keeley about some of them.
Our police didn't access something or share information or they didn't do something wrong. The Flock system allowed others to access our data. That's what's wrong.
The city's contract will end in February. In other local news this week, Watsonville Community Hospital will not close its intensive care unit despite major financial struggles. KAZU's Erin Malsbury has more on that.
CEO Stephen Gray told KAZU Thursday the federal cuts to healthcare from last year's massive tax and spending bill are a serious concern.
We are projecting a $4.5 to $10 million annual negative impact.
He adds that number might get larger depending on other decisions stemming from the federal overhaul. Gray made his comments after nurses and staff voiced concern Wednesday about understaffing in the ICU. A labor organizer who attended a press event they held shared a video with KAZU showing employee Louise Pierce. She's worked as a nurse for almost 20 years and says the hospital must find other ways to deal with its financial crisis.
As we find solutions together, please don't reduce our services.
The hospital started looking for financial partners last year and is continuing its search.
Erin Malsbury also reported on Salinas City Council member Andrew Sandoval's censure this week.
City Council members said Andrew Sandoval's social media posts mock, discredit, and intimidate other members of the council. The conversation around censoring him lasted about 3 hours on Tuesday. Many of the public comments chastised the council. Cal Paradox was one of several people who told them to focus on other issues.
Instead of addressing real problems that we're facing in the city, you're wasting time and city resources trying to punish a council member who refuses to fall in line.
Just before the vote, Sandoval said he will continue, quote, educating the community, but acknowledged he could take a different approach with fewer caricatures.
That was Erin Malsbury. And a highlight this week, Highway 1 through Big Sur reopened on Wednesday after 3 years. This comes earlier than the projected opening at the end of March. Severe storms washed out a section of the road in 2023. The opening renews access through the Big Sur coastline to San Luis Obispo County. Some residents of a retirement community in Santa Cruz are against a nearby proposed housing development. The Dominican Oaks residents say they are mostly concerned about limited parking at the proposed site, which could increase street parking on their narrow road. Virginia Lieb says this could obstruct ambulance access for elderly residents.
For example, stroke and heart attack patients, it's critical to get them to the hospital as quickly as possible to not only save their lives, but possibly to save them from permanent damage from strokes or heart attacks.
The developer, Workbench, says if the project goes ahead, parking won't affect traffic. The Santa Cruz County Planning Commission asked county staff to investigate concerns around the housing proposal, including traffic impacts and emergency evacuation plans. Santa Cruz residents hosted one of about 1,000 nationwide Ice Out for Good protests last Sunday. KZU's Katie Brown was there.
Roughly 2,000 people filled the sidewalks around the Santa Cruz courthouse on Sunday. Some beat drums and danced to familiar protest songs. This Ice Out for Good protest was among at least 1,000 nationwide. Many signs honored Renee Good, who was killed by a masked ICE Immigration and Customs Enforcement agent last week. Kelly Menahan was among the volunteers wearing bright-colored safety vests to help direct the flow of mostly black-clad protesters.
We asked people to wear all black. It seemed appropriate, you know, for this particular incident as a time of mourning.
Menahan is with the leadership team of Indivisible Santa Cruz County, which organized the event.
We do these events because it's important for people to know that they're not alone and also to remind everybody that there is a resistance.
The resistance included Liana, a 10-year-old who lives in Santa Cruz County. She was at the protest with her mother, Amanda Smith, and some friends, holding a sign with flowers and peace signs with the words "Just Peace" written in all caps.
This way, people will know that people care and that it's not right.
Meg King is a nurse who moved to Santa Cruz in the 1980s.
No, I'm usually just frustrated and angry. Now I'm emotional. Yeah. It's just so sad. It doesn't have to be. We do not have to treat each other like this.
She's protested the Trump administration before, but says this is the first time she's found herself in tears.
And it's, the worst part is how our government is portraying this whole thing. They're just lying, and it's just so disturbing to me.
Monterey, Salinas, and Watsonville also held recent demonstrations.
That was Katie Brown. Yesterday marked 1 year since the world's largest lithium-ion battery fire at the Vistra power plant in Moss Landing. KAZU's Elena Nilsax has this recap of what we've learned so far and what we still don't know.
Breaking news from KSBW Action News 8.
Breaking news out of Moss Landing tonight.
On the afternoon of January 16, 2025, the Vistra battery plant erupted in flames.
This thing is exploding. Look at that. It's just lighting up the night sky, and there's a huge plume of smoke over here.
This was the third time in less than 4 years that Vistra's fire suppression system had failed. But in contrast to the two earlier incidents, this time a massive fire broke out, pumping thick black smoke into the air.
As soon as I opened the door, I got hit with burnt plastic.
I've had a lot of difficulty breathing. My heart rate will jump up like crazy.
That was Sherry Okamoto, who lives in Royal Oaks, about 6 miles northeast of the battery plant. And Jen Wren, who lived in the Aptos Hills when I spoke with her last February. She's since moved out of state, in part because she felt her health concerns were dismissed. At a press briefing 2 days into the fire, Olivia Trombadori of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency said air quality monitoring did not show dangerous levels of particulate matter or hydrogen fluoride.
We have not seen any levels of these two contaminants that would pose a risk to the public.
The air monitoring and ensuing air sampling, which tested for specific metals, only happened very close to the plant. That's because the locations were chosen based on a model of the fire's soot plume that only stretched up to a few thousand feet from the battery plant. In a Monterey County health survey after the fire, more than 1,200 responses listed symptoms including headaches, itchy eyes, shortness of breath, even the lingering taste of metal. Most of the respondents lived well beyond the soot plume modeling area.
We abandoned our house 12 days after the fire.
Brian Roeder and his family decided to leave Prunedale, about 8 miles east of the battery plant, after Roeder's wife started feeling sick. Soon after, Roeder and several other community members started a group called Never Again Moss Landing, NAML for short.
We want to know what happened to people, to the environment, right, to the animals.
These questions have been top of mind for lots of people over the past year, but for the most part, we still don't know the answers. In the months after the fire, county, state, and federal agencies, and Vistra, tested water, soil, air, and surface wipe samples. The picture these test results paint can be summed up this way. People don't need to worry. The findings so far generally don't raise cause for concern. But a lot of people remain skeptical, including Roeder.
The official message that nothing happened is, in my opinion, criminal.
As I say, it's politically inconvenient, and that is the reason.
Glenn Church is the supervisor for Northern Monterey County, which includes Moss Landing. He spent much of the last year advocating for more transparency into what caused the fire and what impact it had. There are two main reasons why Church, Roeder, and others don't fully trust the official test results. One, a lot of people said they got sick after the fire. Two, there was another set of test results, a peer-reviewed paper by scientists at Moss Landing Marine Labs that complicates the picture.
The paper demonstrates that there was a heavy metal fallout related to the fire.
That's Ivano Aiello, the lead author of the study. He found that levels of nickel, cobalt, and manganese skyrocketed in Elkhorn Slough shortly after the fire. Those are the primary metals in the burned batteries. Roeder and Nammel funded their own surface wipe sampling the week after the fire broke out.
The testing we did with the community showed these enormous elevations.
He says Nammel's testing lined up with Aiello's results. Now, the community is left to make sense of two conflicting narratives. One based on a large body of testing from government agencies and Vistra's contractors, and another based on community sampling and the peer-reviewed findings of world-renowned scientists. Church says everyone is just believing what they want to believe.
We have to learn from it and move forward, and I just don't think that's happening, and that's what concerns me.
He's been urging the county to develop a local ordinance that would regulate new battery energy storage facilities.
Just so we can have as much control as possible.
Roeder says Church has been the only official to really engage with the community in the aftermath of the fire.
The information's there, and it's being disregarded. At the end of the day, it's the people in the community who are still sick, and the people who will never know why it is that they get very sick because of this, that I think haunts me, quite frankly.
I repeatedly tried to reach Vistra for this story. They never got back to me. The company faces several lawsuits over the fire. Its contractor is expected to release a preliminary environmental assessment report in the coming weeks. The California Public Utilities Commission says its investigation into what caused the fire is still ongoing.
That was Elena Nilsax, and that story wraps up Monterey Bay this week. This episode was produced by me and Ngozi Cole. It was reported by me, Elena Nilsax, Erin Mosbury, and Katie Brown. Our editor is Amy Mayer, KAZU's news director. We'll be back with more local news next week. Have a great weekend.